WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. The winds are whipping around at 120 miles per hour now, and the rain is coming down on Florida's west coast. Hurricane Idalia is now a Category 3 storm. Residents who haven't evacuated say they're prepared. Christina is staying put with her two young kids in Gainesville.
We are prepared if the electricity goes out, but you never know how long it's going to be out for. We've made lots of pasta so that it's going to be available for the next couple days.
Weather Channel meteorologist Greg Postol.
As extremely dangerous Hurricane Idalia closes in on the North Florida shoreline later on tonight and early tomorrow morning, expect life-threatening, indeed catastrophic storm surge flooding. Hudson, Florida, for example, might be a location that gets over 9 feet of water over normally dry ground in a reasonable worst-case scenario. With water rises 9 feet above, that can easily inundate the first floors of homes and businesses.
It's expected to be an extremely dangerous Category 4 hurricane when it makes landfall this morning. Crews in Hawaii are almost finished searching for victims of the deadly wildfire, and now the EPA is going in to remove hazardous waste. Police Chief John Pelletier.
The last remaining 1%, which was the ocean, we have 4 miles that the FBI is going out right now, and they're going to go 200 yards out.
Tennessee lawmakers have ended a very heated special session. CBS's Jim Crisula.
Republican lawmakers reprimand a Democratic Tennessee State Representative Justin Jones during a special legislative session.
You're out of order.
All I was doing was focusing on lifting up the voice of Davidson County, of my district, who said we need mental health professionals, counselors, we need common sense gun laws.
The move prompted loud cries and chants from the public gallery.
And the State House refused to take up gun control measures in the session. President Biden is working to lower the cost of some common prescription drugs.
Negotiating drug prices alongside other provisions of this law isn't just going to put more money back in the pockets of millions of Americans across the country. It's also going to lower the federal deficit.
Russian state media released a video of American Paul Whelan inside a prison, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
Paul continues to show tremendous courage. That does not change that his circumstances are truly unacceptable, and we will continue to be very clear about that.
Another concert canceled because of the sweltering hot temps. Rapper 50 Cent called off his Tuesday show in Phoenix, writing on social media that 116 degrees is dangerous for everyone. Other concerts have been impacted by the heat. Heavy metal band Disturbed canceled their show in July. This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Prescriptions required.
Kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group Wisconsin Breaking News today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, Big Newton lover,
of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Who's the most fun to drink with of the Republican lawmakers? Todd also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
You can always let us know if you are drinking with lawmakers at 844-967-2789.
Moving Wisconsin forward one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the second hour, the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. We got Greg Bach on the board. And it is not a new story at all that Wisconsin has a teacher shortage, that the country has a teacher shortage. But even more acute is the special education teacher shortage. And with about half of Wisconsin's new special education teachers leaving the field after just a few years, the Department of Public Instruction is launching a new program to both attract and retain instructors. And here to tell us more about that program is Barb Van Herren, who is an education consultant on the special education team with DPI. Welcome to the show, Barb.
Good morning, Kristen and Greg. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited to hear more about this program. And before we jump into that, though, I think sometimes, like I grew up, two of my aunts were, one was a special ed teacher, one was a special ed aide, and I had grew up with an uncle with Down syndrome. So like, I have some access to special education and knowing what it looks like. But I think a lot of people, like, it's kind of a big umbrella. And so when we talk about what is the job? How does the job differ when we're talking about special education teachers versus general ed teachers?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And first and foremost, I think educators, all educators have just a demanding job. And
absolutely,
I have tremendous respect. And as a former special education teacher, tremendous respect for those in the field. And I really find that our special educators have like an extra layer, right, of responsibilities. Our students with disabilities are in the general education classroom. And so special educators need to have a good, solid foundation on general education curriculum and how to adapt and modify that curriculum for all of the students. In addition to that, they also need to be the experts in the building on how to provide specially designed instruction for students with disabilities, how to develop individual education programs or IEPs, and then how to conduct a comprehensive special education evaluation, collect good data. They are collaborating with families and with their colleagues. So they are also, in addition to really having a good foundation in general ed, they're also the special ed experts in the building. So there's a lot on their plates for sure.
And it's also because there's a huge range of disabilities that require special education. And so it's everyone like my uncle with Down syndrome to autism, but also with like speech and language impairments. And so like, how do you even, especially with diminishing resources sometimes, like how does a special ed teacher even start to run the gamut of knowing how to tailor like what this kid needs versus this kid, and on very sometimes different scales as far as how much of additional help they need versus being able to balance, you know, they could be in general ed classes for some, but they need a little bit more help. Like that just seems like a huge range that they constantly have to cover too.
You are absolutely correct. And in Wisconsin, we recognize 12 different categories of disabilities, ranging from autism to specific learning disabilities, speech and language, and then our more sometimes students with more significant and complex needs, such as intellectual disabilities, students who are blind or visually impaired, deaf and hard of hearing. So it takes a really special skill set. And then that ability to adapt and be flexible to meet that wide range of needs. Because you're absolutely correct. They may have a student with some mild learning needs or mild articulation needs, up to students who need significant care and attention to medical needs and other personal and physical needs. So the range and the continuum is very broad, and it really requires a very broad range. I always say tools in the toolkit, right? And they need to have a lot in their toolkit to be able to draw from in order to meet all of those individual and unique needs of the students.
So switching over, before we get to the logistics of the program, let's talk, we've kind of covered what a special education teacher does. So let's talk a little bit more about what the need is and like the dire situation that we find ourselves in, and why a program like this exists to try to solve that problem.
Yes. Well, and as you referenced, the nation is experiencing teacher shortage. We've had unprecedented resignations and retirements in the past few years. However, historically, special ed has always had staffing challenges. But now I think we're seeing that at a much higher rate than even in the past. It's a demanding job. Mm-hmm. I think as we talked about all the additional responsibilities that a special educator has, in addition to teaching on a daily basis. And we're also experiencing, and I know our institutes of higher ed, our educational prep programs are saying, we just are not seeing the number of individuals coming into the field. And even when they do enter the field, it doesn't mean that it results in them entering a teaching position in a special education classroom or, you know, in our public schools. We often compete with the medical field, particularly in our related services areas like speech and language, occupational and physical therapy, who may go to the medical field instead of an educational field. So that pipeline that we maybe one time had been seeing is just not as robust as it had been. So when districts are unable to fill those special education vacancies with someone who has completed their preparation program, they are allowed to hire someone with a bachelor's degree, but the individual may not have any teaching experience or any special education experience. But when they're hired, they're expected to complete those licensing requirements in the first few years. This situation has actually tripled in the last decade.
Wow.
And the area that we see the most, we call this license with stipulations, the area that we see the most license with stipulations is in special education and what we term cross-categorical teachers, those that are most often hired special education teachers within classrooms. So, and as you mentioned, 50% are most likely to leave in their first few years. It is a dire situation. When I first started the program in the spring of 2022, we conducted a lot of focus groups. We spoke to teachers and heard about The demands of the job and the need for more support in their experiences. And we also heard from leaders, school leaders, and our institutes of higher ed who were saying, you know, they need support, but, you know, after they leave the halls of higher education, we're not able to continue that support for them. In schools, you know, school leaders are saying we may have mentoring programs, but we may not have the full capacity to provide them with the support that they need. So that really allowed us to think at the special education team, say, where should our priorities be? And so addressing this, these staffing challenges and this need for induction became a priority and a focus for us in the last about year and a half.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Barb Van Haren, who is an education consultant on the special education team for the Department of Public Education. And we are talking about a new program, the Special Educators Induction Program, that is has started, and in the attempt to attract and retain more special education teachers, because it is an even more dire situation than our already established teacher shortage. And so let's hear more about the actual logistics of the program.
Great. Thanks. Our component, the three components in our induction program, and the first is a ongoing, just-in-time kind of professional learning. And we are really helping build the capacity of new special education teachers in evidence-based practices and special education requirements. So the first half of the year, there's going to be six sessions, full-day sessions, that really are going to concentrate on instruction. What do they need day one in the classroom? And we're going to talk about explicit instruction and student engagement and giving those really good evidence-based practices and getting those in that toolkit that I talked about. The second half of the year will be more focused on special education requirements, such as writing really good IEPs and conducting good evals, and how do you collect good data and collaborate with your colleagues. So those are the content. It's all based on research, but that's the first component of the induction program. The second component is a coaching component, individual coaching sessions, following up with what they've learned and applying it then in the classroom. And then the final component, which I think is really compelling and maybe really helpful, is a support network where we're going to help build two things. One, their emotional resilience as a new educator. And secondly, their problem-solving skills. So we're going to give them an opportunity to bring a problem of practice to the forefront. So they'll be with a cohort of 25 new special educators, and they can talk through the opportunity of an issue that they may face, and it's going to give them good ideas and strategies and help build those problem-solving skills. And every district who participates or has a participant in the program will receive up to $1,500 to offset the cost that they will have for participation. And that will need successful completion, and that will offset things like needing to hire subs, provide some release time, that type of thing. So the kind of logistics of the program, we've leveraged our 12 regional partners, cooperative service education agencies, and our CESAs, and we have trained 36 trainers and coaches or professional development specialists and coaches in each CESA. And in September, they're going to start working with 300 special educators that are brand new across the state of Wisconsin.
That's so exciting. Well, I want to keep you through the break because I know that this was also implemented in Georgia. So we can talk a little bit about what the outcomes were there. We're talking to Barb Van Haren, who is an education consultant with the special education team at DPI. Georgia. So stick around. We can talk a little bit about what the...
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly clear, 50 degrees in the overnight with light northeast winds. A delightful Wednesday on the way. Sunny skies, 73. We'll keep that light east breeze across the area. Warmer Thursday, sunny skies up to 79 degrees, upper 80s by Friday. Right now, it's 55.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Kristen Bry, we got Greg Bach on the board, and we are talking to Barb Van Haren, who's an education consultant on the special education team for the Department of Public Instruction, and we're talking about the new special educators induction program meant to help attract and retain more special education teachers throughout Wisconsin, and it's kicking off in September, which is very exciting. And so, we had to cut it a little bit short, but. So there, you said there's 36 instructors and 300 participants that are starting next month?
Correct. We have 12 professional development specialists and then 24 coaches. Each team then will have 25 participants in 12 different regions of the state. And that'll be a total of 300 new special educators that will be have the opportunity to participate. And right now, I think almost all of our registration is full. So we're really excited about that.
That's great. So everything you explain about the program certainly makes sense as far as the retention side of things. Is the expectation that by just having the program be available, it could also help attract people to want to do this, knowing that the support could be there?
Yes, it really helps them both to attract and to retain. I think a selling point for districts as they are recruiting, particularly those who may have that license with stipulation, to say, we will hire you, but we are going to give you this opportunity to be part of the induction program so you have the support that you need along the way to be successful. We know when individuals have a negative experience right out of the gate, no false start is neutral, right? They are less likely to stay and also are maybe reluctant to actually even start in the position without knowing what kind of support is going to be available. So I think it can help with both attraction and retention as well. And then we know that those who complete an induction program are half as likely to leave as those who do not. So I look at this as an opportunity to stop the revolving door,
yeah,
right? Hiring a new teacher, not having a successful experience, they leave the position or the field, and we replace, you know, the district will replace them with another individual, new teacher, maybe not, fully licensed, et cetera. And the door continues, the revolving door continues. And this is really an opportunity to stop that cycle.
And so similar, at least I read that this, a very similar, or if not the exact same program was conducted in Georgia, right?
Correct. And I'm so glad that you brought Georgia up. I actually had the opportunity in our first year of planning and preparation of this program to spend time with the Georgia State Department. I actually participated in some of their training and really had a chance to then model some of the components of Wisconsin's program after what Georgia was doing. And they're a few years in, and they're seeing some really nice and positive, promising results. Right now, some of their statistics show that teachers are reporting, or districts are reporting, about an 84% retention rate following completion.
Wow.
And they also have said about 90% of the participants have said that they either agree or strongly agree that the professional learning that they receive through the program has made a significant decision and has helped them make that decision to stay in the field. So this program evaluation piece, I think, is going to be really critical. We plan to be collecting a lot of data in our first year of implementation, really looking at an opportunity to see what was this impactful, right, in their decision to stay in the field? Was there a particular component or a segment that it was more impactful than others? We're also going to ask our districts for feedback for those who participated. And then finally, our trainers and coaches will be offering reflection logs. How did this go? How can we improve for 24, 25, and beyond? So we want to be able to show really positive results, continue to improve the program, with the hope to expand beyond 300 individuals,
yeah,
on an annual basis, because we have plenty. We have many of our CESAs right now with wait lists.
I was going to say, off the top of your head, do you know how many special education across Wisconsin in the school districts, how many teachers should there be? Maybe we should say that, because maybe yeah, that's not all full.
And I don't have that number, okay, off the top of my head, but I know 300 is just tip of the iceberg in terms, yeah, of really supporting new educators. And so we're really hoping for opportunity to continue the program and expand in its future.
Now, we only have less than 2 minutes left, but we did get a text on the our text line from Dave in the Shaw, who asks, what can parents or community members do to advocate for or support special ed programs and or teachers around the state? That feels like a very good way to end.
Yes, absolutely. Always, I look at the opportunity to support and be partners, right? Be partners with your special educator in the education of children, and really being able to provide, I think, of the most positive special ed experiences for the teacher is going to also impact the families and ultimately impact our students, and resulting in really positive experiences for all. So great question.
Lead with empathy and understanding, and how can I help?
Perfect.
That's like just a good life motto in general. And so Barb Van Heren, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I'm excited to hear how the progression and the development of this program, hopefully, fingers crossed, is actually a good solution for all of this, for our problems. But thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kristen.
Have a great day. All right, when we come back, soon Waukesha is going to be getting their water from Lake Michigan. So we're going to talk about it. What's that going to look like? What does it mean for you if you live in Waukesha? But in general, just have you ever wondered how your water bill gets measured and why it is what it is? We're going to talk about that with Dan Dukenak when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. going to talk about that with Dan Dukenak.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
CBS News Brief. Hurricane Idalia is a Category 3 storm now and expected to strengthen into an extremely dangerous Category 4 when it hits land later this morning. CBS's Omar Villafranca in Crystal River, Florida.
Now, there are shelters, but from what we are hearing and seeing, they're not really filling up with people as of this point. But the evacuations, they say mandatory, but there's no government entity going door-to-door and removing anyone from their house at all. They're just telling them, if you stay and you need help, we're not going to be able to help you.
The storm is already intense, packing 120 mile per hour winds right now and causing flooding in some coastal areas. President Biden is negotiating lowering the price of 10 prescription drugs under the Inflation Reduction Act.
Drugs that treat everything from heart failure, blood clots, diabetes, kidney disease, arthritis, blood cancers, Crohn's disease, and so much more.
CBS News Brief. I'm Stacy Lynn.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886. And tell Congress to support the AM radio for every vehicle act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba.
Please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that some of what we do in government always is political. It has policy impacts. It has political impacts. But if your raison d'etre and your organizing principle is that my guy wins and your guy loses, the entire country suffers. That is not our call to serve. That is not what we raise our hand and say an oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Greg Bach is on the board. What music were we just listening to? That was very smooth.
It was Take Me to the River by the Talking Heads.
Oh, I did not
water
know
related.
Covered, did not know they covered that song.
So good.
So good. Well, yes. I don't. You know, I wonder how often do you ever wonder where your water comes from?
Actually, as a Waukesha native, I've thought of that for a very long time.
So you are a Waukesha native. So this story, our next guest and topic,
yes,
is you've been wondering about this.
I've had so many connections to this, whether growing up in Waukesha, having problems with the water, working in Racine when the mayor at the time was trying to work with the former mayor of Waukesha to get water. Like, I'm in this.
All right. Well, let's get to it. So this is a project that's decades in the making, but as of next month, I think, fingers crossed, Waukesha is going to be getting their water delivered from Lake Michigan because the pipeline is basically done, right? Our guest is Dan Dukniak, who is the general manager of Waukesha Water Utility. And is that, like, an accurate statement that, like, we're ready to go?
Well, I wouldn't say we're ready to go yet. It's an accurate statement that I should say, first of all, good morning.
And good morning. Nice to... Thank you for being here.
Yes, the pipeline is installed and ready to go. We have for those familiar with Waukesha, we have two 8.6 million gallon reservoirs, a booster station, and an elevated storage tank that are all constructed. And we're going through what we call the quote-unquote commissioning process right now, where we have to flush and safe sample the lines and make sure everything's ready to go before we can actually implement the transition.
So, but close. After considering... Go ahead.
There's a lot of, you know, as a lot of people sometimes put it, you know, we're the duck on the pond. It looks really nice, and we look really nice and calm up on top, but underneath our feet are going crazy right now.
Because, you know, I'm only, you know, recently I moved back to Wisconsin in 2020, only really started learning more about Waukesha when we started doing this show from Waukesha over a year ago. But this is a project that, like, the approval for this came in 2008. So this is 15 years in the making?
Well, it's so, yeah. 2008 was the approval of the compact itself.
Okay.
The approval for this project actually came in 2016.
Okay.
June of 2016. So that's when we started. That's when we got the approval, the unanimous approval from the eight governors and with input from the two Canadian provinces. And so since 2016, we have been working on designing and then constructing this project.
So that seems like a lot of consensus. You said eight governors and two Canadian provinces that all had to sign off on this?
It was not consensus. It had to be unanimous because if one governor voted no, we were not going to get any water from the Great Lakes. So we had to have unanimous approval. And you can imagine that's a story for another show. But having all the Democrats and Republicans come together and unanimously say yes with input from two Canadian premiers, that was pretty challenging in and of itself.
I can only imagine. And so before we kind of get into, like, what's going to happen now, what, to remind people what problem this solves, like, what was the issue that we're like, we need to switch where our water source is coming from?
Well, so it all started with radium. Radium, Waukesha is in violation of the radium standard in the water supply. But then when you look into the water itself, it's not sustainable for the long term. So if we were going to be spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on a solution, we sure wanted that solution to be sustainable for the long term. And so we could have gotten by and we could have treated groundwater. However, we had a long-term sustainability issue. We were sitting here and the aquifer was declining, getting further and further, get lower in the mm-hmm. below the ground, and more water problems were coming as a result of that decline in the aquifer. So it wasn't that we couldn't treat the water. It was that we had a long-term sustainability problem also. And the impetus to the problem or what started everything was the radium issue itself.
Got it. So now there's been the construction as far as there is a pipeline that is coming from Lake Michigan to Waukesha. So what, once this is on, you know, and the water source is switched over, what changes for the people of Waukesha? Like, is there going to be a noticeable change in how the water tastes?
Absolutely. You make it sound so simple, though, with this, the construction. Well,
all right, tell us more about the construction of that. Let's give credit where credit is due.
So there's a pump station that's being built in Milwaukee. Water that comes from Milwaukee to the reservoirs and booster pump station in Waukesha gets used in Waukesha, gets treated at our clean water plant, and then gets returned to the Great Lakes as part of this project through a pipeline that goes back to the Root River. Water flows through the Root River back to the Great Lakes. So we get into their recycle and reuse cycle that we want to be in, where we'll have a long-term sustainable water supply for the residents here. Are there going to be changes? Absolutely. There's going to be a lot of changes. First and foremost, the most important one, I think, for everyone is, other than taste, it is going to taste different because the mineral content is going to be a little bit different. But the change in disinfectant is going to be is a big one that we want to make sure our residents are aware of, especially if you have if you're going through dialysis, at-home dialysis, you need to be aware of it.
Oh, interesting.
Because you need to remove chlorine. So we're going from chlorine, which we use sodium hypochlorite or bleach for disinfectant, to a chlorine ammonia blend. So there's ammonia in the water, and that it's fine. It's safe for everyone. There's a lot of systems that use it, but Milwaukee uses it. We use free chlorine. So we're in that transition. There's going to be chlorine and ammonia in the water. And the last thing you want to put into your body if you're going through dialysis is ammonia. So what you want to do is you want to make sure you get the right filter. All it is the right filter. There's Milwaukee supplies water to 860,000 people in 16 different communities. It's nothing major that needs to happen. It's just, you just need to be aware of it. And you need, if you're doing at-home dialysis, you need to put that water through a different filter rather than just dechlorinating it. Same thing with fish and reptiles. When you use water, tap water for your fish and reptiles to do the water change out or anything, you'll need to, instead of dechlorinating the water, you'll need to dechloraminate the water, which means you'll have to put the water through a filter. You can get it at your fish store. The filter, it's cheap. It's inexpensive. You put the water through that filter. It takes out the ammonia and the chlorine, and you're good to go. So that's one of the biggest things that we're trying to get out to people that are going through dialysis or that have fish tanks or reptiles at their homes. We don't want, Nemo floating the wrong way when the kids go home. So
when you say filter, is that like a Brita filter, like something as simple as that?
It pretty much is. You need to put it through somewhat type of a Brita filter that will take the ammonia out of the water, and then you'll be able to utilize that water for your at-home dialysis or your reptiles and your fish.
Why is it different? This is just this might be a biology question that you can't answer, but why would it be different the doing it for reptiles and fish, but not like dogs and cats and like the water you give them, or even the water that we're drinking, versus doing it for dialysis?
And the water that we're drinking is fine. It meets all the standards for reptiles and fish. The ammonia has a more of an impact on that because they're a lot smaller. Yeah, so it has a lot more impact on those types of, and it's not that it would have an impact right away. It's that when you get into that cycle, if you've ever had a fish tank or an aquarium, you have to change out the water. And when you're changing out the water, if you're constantly adding ammonia to that water, that could be a problem for the fish.
And is that,
especially for the fish that are more, well, I was just going to say, especially for the fish that are more susceptible to it, you might have more hardy fish, like a goldfish, that won't have any problem with it. And your cats and dogs are more hardy. They're not going to have a problem, just like humans don't have a problem. But for those fish that are more susceptible to those types of issues, they could potentially have a problem. And again, it's just a caution that we want to make sure everybody's aware of it.
And is that in perpetuity, or is that just during the transition?
No, that will be in perpetuity. Okay. You'll just have to change the way that you're treating your water when you're using it for either your reptiles or fish or for your at-home dialysis.
Our guest is Dan Dukniak, who is the general manager at Waukesha Water Utility, and we are talking about the big transition happening next month as far as Waukesha's water coming from Lake Michigan. As a former Waukesha resident, do you have any questions, Greg?
Well, this is a very weird question because it doesn't have so much to do with Waukesha, the city? Is this Waukesha County's water or Waukesha City?
It's Waukesha City's water.
Okay.
So as part of the approval through the 8 governors and 2 premiers, the water area that we can serve, the water service area, was set by them. And if we want to modify that at all, we have to go and ask for modifications to it. So it is for the City of Waukesha Water Utilities' current service area. Gotcha. And any area that is within that area.
Okay. All right.
To now, be developed.
What were also the other ideas as well? Like, I mean, like I said, I have somewhat of a memory of this stuff. Like growing up, the water was, you know, we knew their water wasn't great. Everyone in Waukesha had to have like a radon inspection like thing in the wall. But also over the years, the different ideas on how to get the water, I don't want to say cleaner, but just get the ideas to make this happen over the years.
Right. There is a number of alternatives that were looked at. I believe, in the teens, there was over 10 different alternatives that were looked at. We went through the environmental impact statement process with the DNR. So when we submitted our first application back in 2010, the DNR took 3 years to evaluate and review that. They asked for 28 additional technical memoranda that went through it. It looked at all different groundwater and surface water alternatives. If you think about it, there's really only two places where we can get our water. There's groundwater and surface water. So we looked at all those different alternatives. We went through this EIS process. We have over 3,000 pages of study that stand behind our application. And lo and behold, we went through the process and had it approved.
There you go. So I guess the other big question beyond what we're saying with, you know, if you need to get a filter. But, you know, the thing that people also care about, we actually started today's shows as far as utilities. And the cost, and sometimes, you know, that was more about billing errors. Right. But are people, how does this change how much people are paying for the water in Waukesha?
Absolutely, it does. Costs are going up. We all know that moving forward. We had said back in 2016 that bills were going to double or triple. We are going to be about 2.7 times where we were. So we're going to be right where we said we were going to be. We had, in fact, in 2016, we had projected where our bills were. In 2018, we projected where our bills were. And we are actually going to come in a dollar under where our bills were per month. So the project is coming in at cost and under budget in terms of bill projections. So we're really thankful for all the help that we've received from our federal legislators and from the state government in terms of financing. We were lucky when we bid this out, costs were a little bit more reasonable and financing was a lot more reasonable.
Yeah.
All of our loans are under 2%, our biggest one being 1.1% over 40 years. So we were really lucky that we weren't going out right now.
Right. But yeah, seriously. You know,
there's a cost. I mean, everybody forgets about water. They think about it when they turn their faucet on, they have water coming out. They can consume that water. When they flush their toilet, they expect everything and take a shower. They expect everything to go away. You know, they forget about that unless it breaks. Well, it is pretty important to have fresh drinking water in your home. So it is a vital service, and you may have to pay a little bit more for that in the near future.
Absolutely. And I think that I think about that often as far as just the ability, like when you think about places where water is not as clean and you have to think way more than the unconscious, like throw it on your plants, throw it in when you're cooking, just the how much we have access to clean water that does not make us sick. And it is something that we should expect to pay for. So Dan Dukniak, thank you so much for spending time with us today. This was super interesting.
No problem, and have me back anytime.
Absolutely. All right, have a great day. All right.
Awesome.
We're gonna have one more break and come back and wrap up the show. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up.
Teachers learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. It also delivers vital emergency information when your community needs it most. A new bill in Congress would ensure AM Radio stays in your car, because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly clear, 50 degrees in the overnight with light northeast winds. A delightful Wednesday on the way. Sunny skies, 73. We'll keep that light east breeze across the area. Warmer Thursday, sunny skies up to 79 degrees, upper 80s by Friday. It's 53 at our studios.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. He is Greg Bach. Talking about something good, I have some good, I think, news that you will like, specific because of your hobbies.
Okay.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
I know exactly where you're going with this.
Lego.
Yes.
Not Legos.
That's right.
As you like to remind me. It's not plural. So what do you call a bunch of bricks then when they're lying on the floor? What is the plural of Lego?
Look at those Lego pieces.
Okay, so it's Lego pieces.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Lego is releasing Braille versions of its toy bricks, and it's going to be available to the public for the first time ever. That's super cool.
That's very cool. That's very, very cool. They never stop being awesome.
It's interesting because I guess I'm also wondering, because those Lego pieces are so tiny. Like, mm-hmm. How many dots can you put on them? And I'm so interested to see. Have you seen these ever? Like, have you seen a special edition in any of your Lego conferences that you've gone to?
Okay, all right. Slow down.
Wasn't there a big one last year that came to Wisconsin?
I went to Brick World 2022.
Yeah.
But you're making it sound
like... I'm not making fun of you. I just know I like that you love Lego, and I think that it's like puzzles, right? It's like people who are super into puzzles. It's a similar thing. But have you ever seen what these look like with the Braille?
No, I think they're super brand new, so I've never gotten a chance to handle them.
And so, they've released Braille versions of its famous toy bricks, marking the first time the product has been released to the general public. The Braille bricks are designed so that anyone who is curious about Braille can have fun getting to know the Braille system at home with their family members in a playful, inclusive way. So they are aimed at kids who are 6 and older, and they're regardless if you're blind, partially sighted, or sighted, meant for everyone. And I guess up until now, the Braille bricks have only been distributed free of charge to organizations specializing in education of children with vision impairment. But now they're going to be open to the public. And so I thought I picked that story specifically for you, Greg Bach.
I appreciate you. I have so many sets that are still sealed in boxes. Since we moved, it's just been like, I think I'm going to talk to Bridget and kind of make the basement into a room for me, because not like just for me. I don't like man caves. Those things that weirds me out. So, but just a fun place where I can go work on Lego, play guitar, maybe work on some other projects I've been thinking about.
So a man cave?
No, not a man. Everyone's invited. It's a person holler.
But I feel like you know what's so funny? I actually overheard. Where were we coming? I think we were coming out of a concert. It might have been Summerfest. We were coming out of somewhere recently, and there was a very loud conversation happening between two guys and a girl as far as what a man cave is.
Yeah.
And the two guys were insistent, and I actually agree with this. It's the one room, because in many relationships, we'll say, most heterosexual relationships, we'll say, the woman has more opinions on decor.
Okay.
Stereotypically. And that the man cave is less at like no girls allowed. It's not like Little Rascals. it's more that is a room where the guy can decorate it however he wants.
Well, then that is then ultimately then it is not a man cave, because the way I want to decorate it is, we have these great old time movie posters. There's a couple of, I gave Bridget a couple years ago. Her two of her favorite movies are her favorite movie is Blade Runner.
The
first one.
Okay.
And then she loves the movie Singing in the Rain. And I got her two posters, but the Italian versions, because she spent a year in Italy.
Okay.
So I'm gonna put those up and some movie stuff. So it's really a room for us. But like I just like.
But you're gonna use it more.
Well, I just have. I mean, I don't want to do this stuff in the bedroom with the guitars and the Legos. I want to have a room like, and I don't want to do the kitchen table. It's not a man cave. I just don't like that term.
Okay, it's not a man cave. I'll back off.
It's a couple's cavern. It's a couple's cavern, Kristen. We're all are welcome to Lego, all they'd like, and they want to play my guitar. You can play one of them, not the other one.
So. There's one that's hands off.
One that's totally hands off. That's mine.
What is your upcoming what Lego set? Have you purchased but have not built yet that you were most excited about?
Probably the typewriter. I bought that a while ago.
Oh, is that exactly what it sounds like? It's just like a Lego typewriter?
Yep. Yep.
Interesting.
That one, I also bought the Tosh. I have a bunch. I haven't really have a bunch of them. I started building the Thanos gauntlet years ago, and then I stopped because we were moving, and then I lost a bunch of pieces from it because I also have the Tony Stark nano gauntlet, and I want to build both of those. And just like, so I have matching set, but I won't build the nano gauntlet until I build the rest of Thanos's gauntlet, because I am a nerd.
I think I've already asked you this, but what's the hardest Lego set you've ever built?
I would say the most time consuming would be between the White House that I built, because there's a lot of tons of little pieces.
Okay.
So that was when I realized that this could not be a one at a time thing. Like, I can't build this at once. I gotta split this up over a few hours or a few days. But the one that was the most challenging, I think, and I still love looking at, is the James Bond Aston Martin.
Ooh.
And it's got all sorts of fun little things, like an ejector seat, and like you know, it opens up and like little pistols shoot out and whatnot. So it's a really good time. I really, really enjoy them.
And is Lego like a puzzle where it's like you're figuring it out as you go, or is it pretty much if you follow the directions, you'll be able to do it? And it's just the time consumption of it.
It's the latter. Well, I mean, I'm sure there are people out there who are adept and smart enough where they can look at me like, I know exactly what's about to happen here. But for me, there's something about the puzzle, but also the rules. You're following the instructions. And therefore, when you follow the instructions bit by bit, page by page, when you're done, you have this beautiful piece of art in front of you that you've done, and it's fun.
So it's like a better paint by numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Paint by numbers. Pshaw. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think the Braille thing is very, very cool, so I'm happy to have shared that story. We have some big news that we're going to announce tomorrow as far as some recognition for this show.
Oh, my goodness.
But I'm gonna hold off until tomorrow so we can talk about it.
Oh, good gravy.
Also coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk about this story. I was thinking it was last week or maybe even the end of the week prior, that preschoolers are getting expelled at a higher rate than any other age. So we're going to talk to the two journalists who broke that story, who reported on that story tomorrow. And then we're also in the second half of the show going to have some fun. We want to hear, who are the biggest movie jerks?
Oh,
Yeah, we're gonna rank the best movie jerks of
like
all
the
time.
Characters or actors themselves?
No, the characters.
Okay,
like who right. was you know who was the people that you love to hate? So
gotcha.
Come back tomorrow. Thank you to everyone: Dan Schaefer, Barbara Van Heren, and Dan Dukniak for being with us today. Thank you for calling. Thank you for texting. Come back tomorrow. This has been Ask.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.